Welcome to the Scottsdale Big Book Study, where we will study the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Today's date is Saturday, April the 6th, 2024. And my name is Tanya G, and I'm a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater from Louisiana. I will be your host for today's study, and our co-hosts are Dottie S, Kathy M, of course, Harlan, and Johan. If you have any questions during the meeting, please contact either myself or any of the co-hosts by private message in the chat function. The chat function will be disabled until 5 minutes before the questions and answer session. Please note that the speaker, Harlan G., will be recorded for the duration of the study. However, the Q&A session, which follows, will not be recorded. We ask if you can please make sure to keep your microphone on mute at all times during today's study. And also, please turn off your video if you are exercising, eating, or if you need to step away from your screen for any reason. During the meeting, we will post the link to our seventh tradition. This money goes towards the cost of our Zoom account, the cost of uploading our recording, and we also send contributions to our intergroup and WSO. We will post a link to the previous week's recordings. These are available by clicking on the link that will be posted in the chat box. I will now turn the meeting over to Harlan G.
Thank you, Tanya. Thank you very much. And I hope that everybody is having a great day. Thank you for coming. And I hope it's as astoundingly beautiful where you are as it is here in Scottsdale, Arizona this morning. It is just absolutely gorgeous. It's on the cool side, to be sure, down here in Arizona, but it is just beautiful, just beautiful. For thousands and thousands of years, there was no hope, there was no remedy, there was nothing that could be done for an alcoholic, nothing. They were institutionalized, jailed, left for dead, God knows what. And for women alcoholics, it was infinitely worse. The abuses that women alcoholics suffered, the ridicule, the shame that was heaped upon them was even worse than what happened to the men. Much, much worse. And for thousands and thousands of years, it was surmised, it was philosophized that alcoholism was a matter of stupidity, of lack of character, of lack of discipline, lack of faith, lack of willpower, all the things that I heard as a child. You know, when I was a kid, I wasn't institutionalized. Maybe I should have been, I don't know. But I wasn't institutionalized, nor was I lobotomized. That happened too. I wasn't any of those things. But people would say to me, why don't you just push yourself away from the table? Why don't you just exercise a little willpower? Why don't you get yourself some character, some guts, young man? Because if you loved your mother, you wouldn't eat that way. And if you loved your dad, you wouldn't eat that way. That's what I was told as a kid. And for thousands and thousands of years, this sort of lambasting and bribery, this frothy emotional appeal. If you lose weight, I'll give you this. If you don't lose weight, I'll do this. You know, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. And along came thousands of years. Solomon wrote of alcoholism in the Old Testament, the Book of Solomon. He wrote that he believed that alcoholism was an illness, but he couldn't prove it, and he had no remedy for it. Notice I didn't use the word cure. I've said this before many times, but I want this sort of to roll into what we're going to say today. In the 1640s in England, there was a doctor, and his name was Dr. Trotter. And Dr. Trotter believed that alcoholism was an illness, but he couldn't prove it, and he had no remedy for it. In 1790, the very first Surgeon General of the United States, a man by the name of Benjamin Rush. He published a paper in 1790, and he wrote that he believed that alcoholism was an illness, but he couldn't prove it, and he had no remedy for it. And then along came Dr. William Duncan Silkworth, the little doctor who loved drunks. And William Silkworth, he believed that alcoholism was not a matter of willpower, that it was indeed an illness. And Dr. Silkworth believed that it was a twofold illness, that it was an allergy of the body and a twist of the mind. Now, this word allergy, allergy of the body, is a word that a lot of people struggle with from time to time. And I know I did when I came into OA. And people would say to me, "Don't eat Milky Way bars, you're allergic to them." And I'd say, "That's a load of BS. I'm not allergic to Milky Ways. I eat gazillions of Milky Ways. I don't break out in a rash. I'm not sneezing. I don't have itchy, watery eyes when I eat Milky Way bars." And what they didn't know to tell me was that that is just one manifestation of an allergy. So one day, I looked in a source of information that is very archaic today. Some of you don't even know what this is. And it's called a dictionary. Now, some of you don't know what a dictionary is, but people that are my age do. And I looked up this word allergy, and I found that, like a lot of other words, it has several different meanings. And one of the meanings of this word allergy fit me exactly. It says, an adverse, abnormal reaction to a food, a beverage, or a substance. Adverse means it's harmful. Abnormal means most people do not react the way I do. They react differently. But for the minority of people that react the way I do, I found that this definition fit me exactly. When I eat a Milky Way bar, I can never just eat one. Never. Why is that? Because this allergy, this adverse abnormal reaction is harmful and abnormal. What is this reaction? What is the manifestation of this allergy? And Dr. Silkworth explains that it is a craving beyond human aid, that this craving for more and more and more and more is not what most people experience. I didn't know that. I thought when I was a kid, I believed that when other people ate foods like French fries, McDonald's hamburgers, ice cream, pizza, whatever, candy, sugar, whatever, that they reacted the way I do, but that they had some modicum of willpower, this enormous reservoir of willpower that I did not seem to have. And so I became more and more defeated as time went on because I believed I wasn't as smart. I wasn't as strong. I wasn't as good. I wasn't as wonderful as other people around me. And I believed that they had a strength that I just didn't seem to have. And so I just wanted to die. I just wanted to be left alone to die. And when people would say to me, "Don't eat that way, you're going to die," inside I said, "Oh, I hope it's soon," because I didn't know how to live in this world as an object of ridicule, which I was. I didn't know how to live in this world as a person who never went on a date, which I didn't until I was 35 years old. I didn't know how to live in this world as an emasculated person. I didn't know how to live in this world as a morbidly obese human being who couldn't get in and out of a car, who couldn't sit on furniture without breaking it, who couldn't walk, who couldn't stand, who couldn't do the things that normal people do. I didn't know how to do that. And the other side of the illness is a twist of the mind. And that twist of the mind wasn't searching necessarily for more food. It was searching to relief of the untenable pain of not eating. And the pain of not eating for me is so monumental that I cannot stand it. And that when fear, guilt, happiness, anger, shame build up within me, this buildup of human emotions has my brain screaming to put food into it so that that food for 9, 10 seconds will give me relief from the world that I was born into and take me to a world of my own population. Only I could go into that world of the Milky Way bar or the pizza, and that mental effect, the mental twist would give me that effect. And what is that effect? It is that sense of ease and comfort that comes instantly by eating certain foods. If I can't eat because of the allergy, and I can't keep from eating because of the twist of the mind, I'm powerless over food and my life is unmanageable. Now, there is a title to this chapter that I've talked about, and I'm going to briefly talk about it again. And I want to make sure that I talk about it again because I don't want anybody to listen to this podcast or be in this meeting. And I don't want to take a chance that you weren't here last week or the week before and you missed this because the title of this chapter is one of the greatest promises that I've ever been that has ever been bestowed upon me. Because without the title to this chapter, I would be dead. The contents are critical to my survival, but the title to the chapter is a promise I choose not to live without. The title is There Is a Solution, with the emphasis on the is. And I never found a solution anywhere else in this world. I was a TOPS king, a Weight Watchers king. I was on diet pills prescribed by a doctor when I was 9 years old. I was on diet pills when I was 10. I was on diet pills when I was 14. I have been medicated with heavy amphetamines. And I have been a successful dieter for short periods of time. None of that helped me. There is a solution means that there is a solution. And now, for the very first time in my life, I can look at the book and look at the fellowship and look at the program which is in the book and say, maybe there is hope for me yet. Now, I can't get sober on the fellowship. I can't be remedied by the fellowship. But the fellowship can help because when you share your stories, when you share your realities, it makes me feel less alone. And much of the knowledge that I get comes from you. But the real help comes from God. Now, I am not an agnostic, nor am I atheist. And if you are, that's okay. Because the only thing that we have to be willing to do is believe that there is a power greater than ourselves. And as long as we're willing to believe that there is a power greater than ourselves, that is step two. But we're still in step one right now. Let's go to page 19. And on page 19, we're going to find at the top of the page, none of us makes a sole vocation of this work. Now, I want to get back to the title while you search for page 19. None of us makes a sole vocation of this work. So I said there is a solution with the emphasis on the is. Now, what about there is a solution? There is a solution. For me, decision making, I got to sneeze because my allergies are off the charts today. Sorry. Everything in Arizona is coming up. We're in the throes of spring. I was watching the Cubs game yesterday, and it was cold as hell in Chicago. Oh, my God. My eyes are just killing me. These fakakta allergies are just rampant today. I'm going to just keep doing the best that I can, but the allergies are just rampant today. Where was I? Oh, there is a solution. There is a solution. One of the things that really is hard for me to do is to make a decision. And I don't like making decisions. I don't think a lot of people do. And that's why sales is such an important profession, because we help people hopefully make decisions that not only benefit us, but that benefit them. But making a decision can be hard. Now I don't have to make any decision. Not long ago, 2 weeks ago, I got a bridge in my mouth. I got a bridge in the front here. I had some periodontal disease, a lot of periodontal disease. And then I fell last September at Sky Harbor Airport in Phoenix. And when I fell, I was on my way back from Chicago. One of my teeth got loosened and one of them got chipped. So they had to put a bridge in. And I had to go to the store and I had to get a product by which I could floss with water underneath the bridge, because you don't want to lose the rest of what you have. And I couldn't decide for the life of me which one to buy. So I asked a friend, what do you have? And he told me, and it was the best decision. But that's how I made the decision. I just mimicked what he had. And I thought it was a great decision. But I normally have a problem. But because there's a solution for me. Now, some of you may recover with OA literature. I'm not knocking it. That's great. It says in this Alcoholics Anonymous, we do not have a monopoly on God. Maybe some of you recover in other ways. That's okay. I'm not here to judge you. I'm not here to pass judgment on what you do to recover, what you do, what you believe in, what you think, what you say, what you do. That's not my business, not even close. For me, there is a solution. And that solution is the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's the only method that has been effective for me. I'm not saying it's the only method that's going to be effective for you. I'm just saying it's the only method that has been effective for me. Now, so the title of the book, There Is a Solution, or There Is a Solution, works either way to give me comfort, to give me solace, to give me faith that everything is going to be okay as long as I do the work. Page 19, none of us makes a sole vocation of this work, nor do we think its effectiveness would be increased if we did. And that flies in the face of what they originally wanted. And what they originally wanted was three things: a book, which we all have, to a chain of hospitals, because hospitals were reticent to treat alcoholics because A, alcoholics almost never got better, and B, they're famous for not paying their bills. So a lot of hospitals didn't necessarily want alcoholics in their midst. So they wanted to start a chain of hospitals, and Dr. Bob was going to be in charge of the hospitals. And they also wanted to have paid missionaries going forth through the country and proselytizing the AA way of life to alcoholics. Well, now he says, we think it's effective. Nor do we think its effectiveness would be increased if we did, because in the time between 1935, when this original idea came about, and 1937, 38, he learned that in order for the message to be carried, it not only must have depth and weight, but in the presence of somebody getting paid to carry it, it's not going to work. I wonder how many of you, of the many who tune in this morning, and I'm flattered that you're here, how many of you would tune into this if you found out I was getting paid to do this? I think it would sour you. It would definitely sour me if I found out that somebody was doing this because they were getting a paycheck. What we give, what we have, what we are, what we do has to be free. Now, that's not to say if a book is written that somebody doesn't make money on it. Bill Wilson made money on the Big Book. He was paid a royalty for writing the book. The income of Bill Wilson in the last years of his life was over $2 million a year. In the last years of his life, he supported Ebby financially, and Bill made a lot of money from the sale of the Big Book, the 12 and 12, and a book called As Bill Sees It. He made quite a large sum of money, but none of what he's giving you here is something that he, gets paid a royalty on, who recovers, who doesn't, whatever. You see the difference? Okay. Good. Now everything goes to the AA, goes to AA itself. Nobody gets any royalties. They're all dead. But okay, now the next sentence here is extremely important. And as a sponsor, I have to be on the lookout because people come in here with what I call a diet mentality. And that diet mentality is this: I'm going to lose my weight. And when I lose my weight, I'm out of here. Now, remember that this is a disease of the mind and a disease of the body. And the weight that you carry is only a manifestation of that disease. It is not the disease itself. Food is not the problem. Food is the solution to the problem. What is food the solution to the problem? It's the solution to anger, happiness, fear, jealousy. It's the solution to this buildup of human emotions. And when you are born as a compulsive overeater, you are scared to death most of the time. You are angry much of the time. You see the world that we live in, and it scares the crap out of you. If somebody would have said to me from ages zero to about 20 years ago or 25 years ago exactly, how do you feel today? If I was honest with them, maybe a little more. But if I was honest with them, I'd say, I'm scared to death. And they'd say, what are you scared of? And I'd say, everything. And they say, that's crazy. Maybe it's crazy for you. It's not crazy for me. I'm a compulsive overeater and I'm uncomfortable in the world I was born into. And the only thing that makes me comfortable is pizza and French fries and ice cream. And when I'm eating pizza or ice cream or French fries, I'm not scared for about 9 seconds. That's why your brain wants you to eat those things. But losing the weight is not the end of the line. And when we read this, we feel the elim that elimination of our drinking is but a beginning, is where many, many people come and go and come and go and come and go. Because they come in, they lose their weight or some weight, and at some point tell themselves, I've got this now. I'm done with this. I don't want to put up with your lousy meetings. I don't want to sit in the church basement anymore. I put up with your, this is back in the days when we had live meetings. I've put up with your lousy coffee, and I've put up with your stinking complaints about this and that and your husband and your kids. I don't want to hear it anymore, and I'm out of here. And what happens to those people? Do they keep their weight off? No. I've never seen anybody on the street, in a movie theater, in a grocery store, at a, whatever, at a gas station, that has been away from here for a long period of time that looks fantastic. I've never seen it. They always put the weight back on, or they always go back to the purging or the starving. I'm not an anorexic, so I don't always relate to that side first. But just to present it, they don't just all of a sudden get better and leave and they're fine. That's not the way this works. So we feel that that elimination of our drinking is but a beginning. And as a sponsor, it is my job to reinforce with people that this disease is permanent, progressive, and if untreated, fatal. My friend in Oklahoma, Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, says it's permanent, progressive, and pa-fatal. Permanent, progressive, and pa-fatal. He likes to have the three P's. So by losing the weight, which I've done on diet pills, I've done by dieting. There are people dieting with group support right here in OA right now. They're not really grasping that this is a program that you do for the rest of your life. They're just in it for the get down to a certain weight. And in their minds, when they get that weight, they're out of here. That thinking can kill you. It can kill you, and it has killed millions of people before you. We feel that that elimination of our drinking is but a beginning, because if you leave after you lose the weight, we will never treat, with God's help, where the fear comes from, where the anger comes from, where the flashpoint of our behaviors is emanating from. We will never get to the bottom lines, because as I recover, now some of you cannot relate to this, you're new, and that's okay. When you're here the first few years, it's don't eat, go to meetings, don't eat, go to meetings, don't eat, go to meetings. That's great. And then all of a sudden, I got into a relationship. And I realized how passive aggressive I was. I got in touch with how much I resented things from my past, not just people, but what I missed out on. I got in touch with how scared and selfish and dishonest of a person that I am by my nature. And I got in touch with that if I keep doing self-esteemable activities, that liking myself and being at peace with God through service and self-sacrifice for others, and through prayer, through meditation, through this conscious contact with God, that I could have a harmonious relationship with myself and God. That I don't have to wake up every morning and hate to be alive. I could get up in the morning and I can say to God, I'm glad to be alive. Thank you for this day of life. This is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. I can serve somebody else and not have expectations that they're going to act a certain way or they're going to give me something. That's freedom. But if I would have left on the day that the scale said, okay, you're under 400, you're under 300. If I would have left on the day that my cardiologist said to me words I never thought I would hear a doctor say, your weight is fine. I never thought those words came out of a doctor's mouth. I thought I was supposed to keep doing what I was doing until I got down to what I weighed in May of 1954, 5 pounds, 11 and a half ounces. So I thought I was supposed to get back to 5 pounds, 11 and a half ounces, 18 inches long. That's what it says on the birth certificate. City of Chicago, County of Cook, State of Illinois, Mount Sinai Hospital in Chicago. I could show you. It says 5 pounds, 11 and a half ounces. Am I supposed to keep going until that's what I weigh again? Maybe that's what I thought. But there's so much more. Don't sell God short. He will bring miracles into your life. He will bring awareness into your life. He will bring peace into your life. He will bring an understanding into your life. He will bring a calmness into your life that you cannot conceive if all you do is concentrate on how much do I weigh. Now, do I need to know how much I weigh? Yes, because I need to know I'm not gaining. I was ready to rip my window out yesterday. I weighed myself. I had a great week food-wise. I lost 0.2 pound. Now, is that fair? I lost 0.2 pound? I'm 69 years old. It doesn't come off. Let me warn you, lose it now because it doesn't come off the way you think you deserve it to or you're gonna. Ain't gonna happen. Ain't gonna happen. So the bottom line is, if you quit because you've achieved a certain body weight, you are just like the child who goes to the circus and you've got that nickel. I'm going back 100 years. You've got that nickel from your mom. And you watch the parade. Now, some of you do not remember the circus parades. They would come through the town and they would march through the town. And the circus was always at either Shriners Temple, a Medina Temple in Chicago, or the International Amphitheater. There was the Shrine Circus in Chicago and there was Barnum and Bailey. And they would, the elephants would come and the giraffes and the monkeys and the clowns. It was spectacular to see the parade of the circus. It was spectacular. But how dumb would it be to go to the parade and not go into the circus? The parade is the losing of the weight. Go inside. Watch the circus. Watch the greatest show on earth. And the greatest show on earth is going to be, look at what God can do for you. Because losing of the weight is only a very bare beginning. I would trade you. I'll put the weight back on. No girl will ever look at me again. I get that. I will never be comfortable physically. I get that. I will be an object of ridicule. I get that. But if I can hang on to the two most important permanent relationships in my life, there's only two, the relationship with me and the relationship with God. And if I can hang on to them and be in peace with both of those relationships, I'll put the weight back on and you'll never hear a complaint out of me. But God is giving you all of the above. All of the above. Why not take it? Yes, if you're overweight, lose the weight. If you're underweight, I don't know what you're supposed to do from that. I'm not an anorexic. If you're bulimic, we have to stop the behavior of the bulimia. But don't just watch the parade. Take the nickel mom gave you. Go into the circus. Watch the show. Because this is better than the circus. You are going to witness miracles that you never thought you could ever witness in your life. To wake up in the morning and not hate yourself, not hate the world, not hate God, not be so hypercritical of everyone in your environment because you yourself are uncomfortable with the world, so you lash out at others constantly. To be able to stop the criticism, to stop the gossip, to stop all this other crap, that's freedom. One more time, we feel that elimination of our drinking is but a beginning. I could do a whole weekend in your town on just that sentence alone. Let's move on. A much more important demonstration of our principles. What are the principles? The principles are the steps. So a much more important demonstration of the steps lies before us in our respective homes, occupations, and affairs. In other words, practice these principles in all of our affairs. Step 12. All of us spend much of our spare time in the sort of effort which we are going to describe. What kind of effort is that? Helping others. A few are fortunate enough to be so situated that they can give nearly all their time to the work. I still work, but I give my time to this, and I seem to be able to do everything I need to do. If we keep on the way we are going, I'm on page 19. There is little doubt that much good will result, but the surface of the problem would hardly be scratched. Those of us who live in large cities are overcome by the reflection that close by, hundreds are dropping into oblivion every day. Many would recover if they had the opportunity we have enjoyed. How then shall we present that which has been so freely given us? And this is a question. Do I walk up to people on the street and say, I've noticed you're morbidly obese. Would you like to go to an OA meeting with me? That probably won't work very well. Show the world what this program has done for you. Live the program. And remember what Francis of Assisi said. Saint Francis of Assisi said, preach the gospel, but only if you must use words. Preach the gospel, but only if you must use words. Show the world what this has done for you. Page 19, we have concluded to publish an anonymous volume setting forth the problem as we see it. What is the problem? The problem is the allergy of the body, twist of the mind. We shall bring to the task our combined experience and knowledge. This should suggest a useful program for anyone concerned with a drinking problem. Very powerful words. This should suggest a useful program for anyone concerned with a drinking problem. Of necessity, there will have to be discussion of matters medical, psychiatric, social, and religious. We are aware that these matters are, from their very nature, controversial. Nothing would please us so much as to write a book which would contain no basis for contention or argument. Most of us sense that real tolerance of other people's shortcomings and viewpoints and a respect for their opinions are attitudes which make us more useful to others. Our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depend upon our constant thought of others and how we may help meet their needs. When I was very young in OA, it was believed that the problems of certain groups of people were so unique that they needed separate meetings. We have, to this day, men's meetings, we have women's meetings, that will still go on, and that's fine. Chicago is a hub for travel, railroad, air travel. When I lived in Chicago, I didn't know what a connecting flight was. Now I live in Scottsdale, which is a bedroom community of Phoenix. I found out what a connecting flight is. Trust me on that. But we had separate meetings for airplane pilots in recovery. We had separate meetings for doctors in recovery, separate meetings for nurses in recovery. We had meetings for gay and lesbian and for this and for we had all kinds of separate segregated meetings. What did we start noticing? That the more we place ourselves apart from the group, the less effective the program is. So a lot of those meetings broke down. They broke down. The best thing I can do now, if you go to a men's meeting or you go to a women's meeting, that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. If you go to other kinds of meetings, it's none of my business. I'm just telling you what I've seen. That when we start to believe that because we're dentists or doctors or nurses or airplane pilots or because of our race or because of our religion that we have to go to separate meetings, it can be a problem. The more we try to achieve the sameness as the other compulsive overeaters, it is much more effective than when we set ourselves apart. We are, as ex-problem drinkers, depend upon our constant thought of others and how we may meet their needs. It doesn't say those who have the same religion, those who are of the same race, those who are of the same profession, those who are of the same where they live. Some of us live in this kind of climate. Some of us live in whatever. No, we are one. We are one. We are more the same than we are separate by far. By far. There is more binding us together than there is separating us. And that's something that we need to know. So we have this situation on our hands where we have to think of others. Okay. You may already have asked yourself, why is it that all of us become so very ill from drinking? Doubtless you are curious to discover how and why, in the face of expert opinion to the contrary, we have recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. We have recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. Now, let's take a look, though, at this other thing. That says, in the face of expert opinion to the contrary, I have been told from the time I was a teenager that I'm not going to live long. I have been told by doctors that I am not going to live to see 30. I'm not going to live to see 50. I'm not going to live to see 60. I'm going to be 70 years old on my next birthday. If I make it to the end of May, I'm going to be 70 years old. Yesterday, I walk 3 miles without stopping. I do that 6 days a week on average. I do it 6 days a week. I can breathe. I can sleep on my back and breathe. I have excellent credit. I have a house. This is my house. I can burn it down if I want to, although the mortgage company and the insurance company would probably not be too happy. I can spit on walls if I want to. This is my house. I can do whatever I want. I don't have a lease. I have a mortgage. I paid cash for my car. I'm still working, which I hate. I wish I was retired. I'm still working. And I wish some other things too. But the bottom line is, doctors have been writing my death warrant for decades and decades and decades, and people have been writing me off for a very long time. Every garment I am wearing, from my Cubs t-shirt to my sweatpants to my socks to my underwear, every garment on my body comes from a store that is normal. Nothing on my body comes from the big and tall section. I have normal blood flow in and out of the heart. My heart is good. I have AFib, but my heart is good. I'm alive. I'm alive. Like me, don't like me, I am alive. My friend in Oklahoma, Craig, he related a story a number of years ago to me, or not maybe years, but at least a year ago. Craig told me a story, and he said that the mathematical chances of a person who is 100 pounds or more overweight of taking off that 100 pounds and keeping it off are near zero. If you have 200 pounds to lose, the chances mathematically of you taking it off and keeping it off are not calculable because there's no success there with which to measure. I have lost over 500 pounds. I am alive and I am a miracle. I'm a miracle of God. I'm a walking, talking, breathing miracle. And I'm grateful as hell. Every day is a gift, every minute is a gift. How in the world could I turn my back on that? And it says here, expert opinion to the contrary, meaning the medical profession, clergy people, you name it. They don't think we can recover because for thousands of years we could not. And we still can't if we try to do it on our own. Try to do this on your own. See how far you get. You won't get too far if you're a real compulsive overeater. If you are an alcoholic who wants to get over it, you may already be asking, what do I have to do? It is the purpose of this book to answer such questions specifically. That is one of three times that he'll tell you why he wrote the book. It is the purpose of this book to answer such questions specifically. And this book is the only book I know of that will answer these questions completely and specifically with clear-cut direction. With clear-cut direction. We shall tell you what we have done before going. We should not tell you what we think. We're not going to tell you what we think you should do. We're not going to tell you what we sense. We're going to tell you what we have done. We're going to tell you what we did because walking the walk is the only thing that's going to help you. Before going into a detailed discussion, it may be well to summarize some points as we see them. How many times people have said to us, I can take it or leave it alone. Why can't he? Why don't you drink like a gentleman or quit? That fellow can't handle his liquor. Why don't you try beer and wine? Lay off the hard stuff. His willpower must be weak. He could stop if he wanted to. She's such a sweet girl. I should think he'd stop for her sake. The doctor told him that if he ever drank again, it would kill him. Yet, but there he is, all lit up again. I was hospitalized many years ago in the early 80s. I had ulcers on the backs of my legs, my lower legs, my calves. And I got cellulitis and staph infection in my legs through these wounds. The wounds came from the profuse swelling in my legs. And I got an infection and I was hospitalized. When I went into the hospital, I was 513 pounds, and that was not anywhere close to the largest I was to get. But I was 513 pounds on that day that I was hospitalized in the early 80s. I'd already been in OA, but I had left. And the psychiatrist came up to my room, because my condition was described as extreme morbid obesity. And the psychiatrist said some things to me that I thought were just brilliant. He told me to try to imagine what happens to me when I eat certain foods, and this will help me not eat them. Brilliant. Just brilliant. And then the nutritionist came up. She weighed about 90 pounds. If you put a lead chain around her neck, she probably never had a second piece of chicken or second piece of pizza in her entire life. She was about as thick around as my pen. And she gave me a great piece of advice. She said, why don't you put a picture of something on your refrigerator, of something you really want? And when you see the picture, you won't eat so much. I thought, these people are geniuses here. Why didn't I think of that stuff? And then somebody came up and said, why don't you just eat half of everything you want to eat and eat everything in moderation? And I thought, there's another genius. None of that would work for people like me, but there weren't people like me, so they could not know that. I've had nutritionists through the years that I've had contact with that think we should be able to eat everything in moderation. I can't eat everything in moderation. I cannot eat everything in moderation. My body doesn't know moderation when it comes to ice cream or pizza or French fries or God knows what, candy or God knows what. There is no moderating me once I get that stuff in my mouth. There isn't. So this paragraph is exactly what I have faced my entire life. Why don't you eat half? Why don't you just do this? Why don't you just do that? All well-intentioned and wonderful advice if you don't know squat about this disease. For the people that don't know squat about this disease, that advice seems sage. Sage. Brilliant. Maria is not here today. She always says, brilliant, brilliant, Maria from Ireland. She always, I think Audrey says it too, but I know Maria says it for sure. That's great advice, but not for people like me. The best advice I ever got in this program is shut up and do what I tell you. That was one of my first sponsors. Shut up and do what I tell you to do. There's a famous picture of Bill Wilson driving a car and he's smoking a cigarette and the caption is, shut up and get in the car. For a long time, I thought shut up and get in the car was the first step. The best piece of advice I ever got is shut up and do what I tell you and you'll be okay. And the more I did what that man told me to do, the better my life got. And the more I lied to him, or the more I evaded what he told me to do and did things my way, the worse my life got. Shut up and get in the car. I know it sounds harsh, but it is about the best piece of advice I could ever, ever give anybody. Look at a picture of something you want and you won't want to eat so much. Were that it were so simple, my friend. Oh, if only it was that simple. I would love it. But it's not that simple. It's just not. Let's continue. Now, these are commonplace observations on drinkers, which we hear all the time. Back of them is a world of ignorance and misunderstanding. Boy, there's a world of ignorance and misunderstanding when it comes to this. We see that these expressions refer to people whose reactions are very different from ours. There's the understatement of the century. Their reactions to food are very different than mine. When I eat pizza, the more of it I eat, the more of it I want. When they eat pizza, the more of it they eat, the less of it they want. They'll eat a piece, maybe two. They're done. I eat a piece, then two, then three. And the next question out of my mouth is, are you guys done? Can I finish this? That's the next question out of my mouth because they're done. And they do things that are very weird, like doggy bags and boxes to take things home and other weird ass behavior. Because I've never done that. And they ask crazy questions, crazy things like, do you want to split a hamburger? Who asks, do you want to split a hamburger? What species of crazy are you? But to them, it just makes perfect sense. This is who they are, this is what they are. Their reactions are very different from mine. Bottom of 20. Moderate drinkers have little trouble in giving up liquor entirely. If they have good reason for it, they can take it or leave it alone. I'm not a drinker. I hate the smell of liquor. I hate the taste of liquor. I've never smoked a joint in my life. I've never taken a street drug in my life. I've had maybe 10 alcoholic drinks in my entire life. I haven't had a drink of liquor since 1976, not because I work a program, because I hate it. I hate it. So I can take it or leave it alone. An alcoholic can't. Bottom of 20. Then we have a certain type of hard drinker. He may have the habit badly enough to gradually impair him physically and mentally. It may cause him to die a few years before his time. If a sufficiently strong reason, ill health, falling in love, change of environment, or the warning of a doctor becomes operative, this man can also stop or moderate, although he might find it difficult and troublesome and may even need medical attention. But they're not alcoholics. Come back next week and we're going to begin with, but what about the real alcoholic? We're going to begin with that. And we're going to do some good work next week. So don't miss it because it's going to be something you're going to like. Before I turn this over to Kathy M., I think, or Audrey or whoever, I think it's Kathy M. I'm going to ask you guys a few things. If you asked a question last week, wait for a lull. Wait for it to kind of die down before you jump in there. And if you do that, I will be forever indebted to you. That would be great. And what else was I going to ask you? Oh, please, no food questions, no math questions, because I don't have answers for the food questions, and I'm horrible at math. Let's do that. And